Right, we're learning Rav Dessler's Strive for Truth, the Michtam Eliyahu in the Hebrew edition. We're on page 44, volume 1. What we were speaking about up to now is the general topic has been Nesina and Netila, giving and taking, the powers of giving, the powers of taking. And more recently we've been speaking about Sheifa. Sheifa is ambition. Is ambition. And we mentioned that the world thinks of ambition as being very, very good, a good thing to have. It's good for a person to be very ambitious. But the truth is that ambition is really a hunger. And while hunger is certainly good, it's good to be hungry, that you don't forget to eat, that you keep up your strength. But hunger is not the sum total of life. Life is not about being hungry. Right? Even if you're hungry and you're filling yourself, to be focused on your hunger is not really the main point of life, or being alive, is to be hungry. Now, this hunger that we're speaking about is a hunger for the material world, material goodness of the world, right? Whether it's food, whether it's items, whether it's possessing, having good times, etc. It is whatever you can take from the world. So the problem with this hunger is it's a hunger that's never satisfied. That's what we explained. In other words, it's a hunger that's a continuous hunger. As much as you feed it, it just continues to grow. So it's a self-defeating task that we take on ourselves. It's like if a person takes it on himself to fill his hunger, so he's basically taking on something that's not possible. He's trying to do the impossible, because he can never be full. As much as he has, he's always be lacking more than what he has. Right? A person doesn't even get to half of what he wants. He can never reach even the halfway mark of what he wants. So therefore it becomes an impossible task of filling hunger. And that's the frustration of hunger. So we talk about hunger means hunger for the physical world, the material world, and it's a hunger you can't fulfill. And this hunger leads to what we call the koach netila, right, the desire to take. Because a person who's filling his hunger is looking to take. He's looking for what he can take for himself. He's looking to fill his hunger, which is an act of taking. In contrast to that, we have what we call a sheifa toiva. What's a good ambition, a good drive? What would be a good drive? So a good drive would be where a person wants to promote his power of giving. He wants to give to others. He has a drive to give to others. And what we have to understand is that they come from two totally different places. It's not ambition. All ambition comes from one place. Just one is appointed this way, one is appointed the other way. Right? Is that right? The ambition for the hunger for receiving, that comes from a lack. And the essence of giving, when a person becomes a giver, he looks to give, that does not come from a lack, it comes from a sense of fullness, of wholeness, of not lacking anything. I lack absolutely nothing, and then therefore I seek to give. I look only to give. Right? The person, Koisi Ruvaya, my cup is filled, my cup is sated, my cup is filled, and then my cup overflows, because I can't even use it all. I have so much. It's so wonderful. I'm happy to share it, because, you know, I can't possibly use it all. Okay, let's say you have enough food for you for 100 people in the table in front of you. I can't eat it all. So, you know, whoever comes is welcome. I'm happy to. So any type of experience where you have more than you could possibly use for yourself. So then there is a desire to give. There's a pleasure in giving. Right? When I have so much, so therefore, obviously, it's a total pleasure to be giving to others. So that can only come. Firstly, a person must be satisfied with his lot, and not only satisfied. He must rejoice. He must be absolutely elated with his lot. He must be joyous about his lot. And by the way, this is a good ploy to use when we have particularly hard times, as we all go through different hard times during the day, during the week, during the month, whatever it is, we have ups and downs. So when you're having a down time, a very important idea to focus on is what a wonderful world we live in. It's such an amazing world. It's so beautiful. We live in such a beautiful world. Now, even though you're not in the mood, when things are going bad, you're really not in the mood to say, what a beautiful world. But if you force yourself to say that, you force yourself to focus on that, so it'll change everything, because that's really from the spiritual point of view. That's because when you're looking at how miserable you are and how much you're lacking, so that's from the material point of view, seeing, well, I don't have this and I don't have that, and I'm lacking this and I'm lacking that, and I'm hungry and I'm so short, and people don't recognize me, no one gives me the proper respect I deserve. No one acknowledges me, I do hard work, and no one thanks me, no one rewards me. So all of that is from a situation of lack, and that comes purely from focusing on material lack. Right? The opposite is from a spiritual point of view, but the world's so amazing. It's all organized by Hashem, it's all run by Hashem. And therefore, once you take on that perspective, then you say, well, if there's something I'm lacking, it must be because I need to lack it. It's part of my toolbox. It's what Hashem is giving me as one of my challenges. This is a special challenge for me that I have to, an obstacle that I have to overcome. Right? If a runner is running an obstacle race, so they put these hurdles up, and he has to jump over the hurdles. He can't run into them and crash them. He'll just hurt himself, right? And he'll fall down. That's not the objective. The objective, if there's a hurdle, you have to get over the hurdle. You have to go around it. You have to go under it. But you have to, that's the objective. So if it's an obstacle case, he says, you know, why are there these hurdles here? So you say to him, well, it's an obstacle case. Well, what do you want? He says, no, I want an obstacle case without hurdles. There's no such thing. He says, what do you mean? You entered in the race. You want to win the race. There are other competitors. You all want to run the same race. And it's an obstacle race. So therefore, you expect hurdles. So the same thing. Kodesh Boku is, if Hashem's sending me difficulties, these are my hurdles which I have to overcome. It's part of the race. It's part of the fun. It's part of the wonder of this world that I have these challenges that I can overcome. Otherwise, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do nothing all day. I'm going to sit in the armchair and stare at stare through the window all day. Watch the buses go by. What's my life about? It's about growth. It's about my own personal growth, and my own personal growth comes from me overcoming obstacles. Right? That's how I grow. I grow through, I'm challenged, and I meet the challenge, and I overcome the challenge, and I'm a greater person as a result of overcoming that challenge, and that was the objective. That's exactly why, right, you give a kid a test. So you don't test a 15-year-old kid with questions that you would ask a 6-year-old child, because it's ridiculous. So what's the point? You know, he came to school to learn that 1 and 1 is 2. He's 16 years old. He learned that 8 years ago. What are you doing? You're wasting my time. So we understand a challenge has to be a challenge. Okay, now to get back to Rav Dessler here. So we're saying here that the desire to give has to come from a wealth of sensing that you're lacking absolutely nothing, and that you have your situation is the absolute ideal situation, and that you're totally joyous with life. When you have that type of joy, so then that is so then there is a desire to give, to share. A way just to describe this before we go on is that where we're engaged in more spiritual pleasures, so there we naturally feel a desire to give. So an example of that would be, let's say you're going with a group of friends on a hike, and suddenly you see a beautiful sunset, and you're the only one who noticed it, and no one else notices. They're all looking in the other direction. So what you do is you call them. You say, come look, come look with me. Share this experience with me. Right? Firstly, there's enough for everyone. Right? It's not, you know, they're not eating up your sunset, right? Because it's you can have 1,000 people all looking at the same sunset, and it's not diminished. On the contrary, the more people looking and oohing and ahhing, it makes the experience more exciting. You have pleasure in sharing the experience with others. Okay, we're listening to a beautiful piece of music. So you're sitting all by yourself and you listen to this beautiful music, and you just say to yourself, I wish someone was here to listen to this with me, right? Mm-hmm. Come and listen. Isn't this magnificent? Isn't this beautiful? You call in a friend, right? You go knock on your neighbor's door. Just come for 2 minutes. Come to my house for a few minutes. You have to hear this. Why do they have to hear it? You need to share it, because once you enter the spiritual realm, you see music is something which is non-tangible in a sense. It's not totally spiritual, but it's that which comes closer to the spiritual realm. It's not, spirituality is more than music. Music is sound waves. It's much more. Spirituality is much higher but it comes closer to that which is spiritual. It's non-tangible music. You can't put music in a box, right? You can put a recording of the music, but it's not the music itself. Or a beautiful sight, like the sunset. You can't put a sunset in a box. You can't sell boxed sunsets, right?
That would be nice.
Yeah. So where there is the spiritual experience, so therefore there a natural outgrowth of that is to desire to give to others. Right? And therefore it depends how we're looking at the world around us. Dealing with our own reality, we're going on to here what he calls paragraph 9. How does a person bring himself closer to becoming a giver? How does he become his own, right? Because life is not all about sunsets and music, right? Life is about, you know, all the 101 other headaches that we have to deal with. And it's not all about, you know, just enjoying it, right? We have the challenges of life, and we have our needs, and we have our deficiencies, and we have the fields and things that we feel that we're lacking. So therefore, all of that turns us into takers. I'm missing this, I'm missing that, I'm looking to take, I'm looking to get, I'm looking to acquire. Right? How do we work on ourselves to try and change ourselves from being pure takers to somehow convert ourselves, at least somewhat, to becoming givers? What devices do we have? So let's read what Rav Dessner says here. Terem she'agia odom lemadregas shleimus ha'enoishis. Before a person can reach the level of being the perfect human, the perfect person, right? We're looking to reach perfection. The perfect person we've described already is totally ecstatic about this world. Everything's great, everything's wonderful. There are difficulties, but that's part of the challenge. It's part of the beauty of the difficulties. Right? Okay, you know, salt is something that's not very tasty, but you still put it in your food. That's because it brings out the taste, it brings out the sweetness, the salt. Even the salt itself is bitter. So therefore, the perfect person who's totally happy with this world, and therefore is only looking to have others share in the beauty of this world with him, and to also to be like him, to also enjoy the world as he enjoys the world. So before we get to that level of being these perfect beings, which we're all working towards being, right? So before we get there, Harei Chos, the person himself, is in a situation where he's lacking. That's all of us. We're all lacking different things, right? And different attributes and different physical items, right? Ein lo ha-she'ifa ha-nediva. So we don't have a desire. It's not our desire to give at the moment. We don't. You don't wake up in the morning and say, "Who can I give to?" Right? First, who can I give to? Right? I'm gonna go in the street with packets of money, and I'm gonna look for people to give money to. That's not our natural starting place. Right? That's the starting place. That, as we say, mentioned before, habomito hachovas hadas. That starting place where a person is looking to give to others. He's looking to bestow, to share with others the goodness of his life. That comes, as we mentioned before, from having a very wide outlook on life, very expansive feeling, expansive sense of what a wonderful world, right? Which we explained before. And therefore, before we can get there, right, before we can get to that perfection which we hope to get to, we have to use as an instrument, we have to use as a means also our drive of hunger. Our hunger. We have to use our hunger. We've mentioned hunger is negative because hunger is all about being a taker. Because I'm hungry, I need to take. But we have to use that force of hunger to help us to become givers. Right? We have to, so to speak, trick ourselves. We trick ourselves into becoming givers by using the force of hunger. Now, this is something we all do. I mean, we do it naturally with kids. You say, you know, right, if you tidy your room, you know, I'll give you a candy or I'll give you some money. So therefore, what if he wants the candy, he wants the money. You want him to do the good deed. You want him to go and learn. You want him to tidy his room. You want him to stop hitting his brother, whatever it is. So therefore, you're using a bribe, you're using his hunger to get him to do good deeds. So we also have to do that for ourselves. We have to use our hungers to get ourselves into the mode of being these very, very happy people who are looking only to give of the wonders of life to others, to share with others the beauty of life. So we're going to have to use this hunger, which is fulfilling our own personal lack, which would come from the desire to take, and self-love, a person loves himself, and therefore, because he's worried about himself, so therefore that's his natural concern. We have to use that interest within ourselves to train ourselves. Lemoshal, for example, Ben Odom Lemokim. For instance, when it comes to doing a mitzvah which is between you and Hashem, Yaseh Shelo Lishmo, do it with a hope for the reward. Right? Sometimes I don't feel like doing a certain mitzvah, I'm not in the mood, or I'm not going to do it with much enthusiasm, and I'm not feeling particularly excited about doing this. So therefore, do it Lo Lishmo, do it not for the sake of Hashem, do it for the sake of the reward. Keep the reward in mind. You're going to get tremendous reward. There's the world to come. There's the reward of the world to come. So therefore, you do it for yourself. If you can't, if you're not motivated to do it purely for spiritual reasons, so do it for yourself. Right? And then hopefully we have the principle, mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma. From doing things selfishly, you'll come to do them selfishly. In other words, you'll get the taste of it. Right? You have no taste for doing a certain mitzvah. But if you're reminded of the reward that you're going to get, someone's going to pay you, someone's going to give you a reward. So therefore, that will motivate you, and then hopefully you'll get the taste of the mitzvah. You'll start doing it. Right? That's how we hope to do with kids. You say to the kid, right, learn Torah, and I'll give you a candy, and hopefully, in while he's learning the Torah, he gets the taste of it, and eventually you'll want to do it even without the candy. Right? That's the hope, right? Not that he should live on candies all his life. You know? Okay, you say to your 40-year-old son, you know, learn Torah, I'll give you a candy. So hopefully you hope he matures out of that state, but you use it so for ourselves also. Remind yourself of the reward. Do mitzvahs even not for their own sake. And by that way, that's one way you can motivate yourself to do the right thing, even though it's not coming from a natural place. It's not a natural outgrowth of yourself. So that's called lo lishmo, not for the sake of the mitzvah itself. Yaseh miyiro, another example, do it out of fear. Anishi yorel enafsho mi'oinesh. I was be scared of the punishment. If I don't do this mitzvah, I'll be punished. I don't want to be punished. To be punished is unpleasant. I don't want to go to Gehenna. Gehenna is an unpleasant place. Or the fear of not being rewarded. Everyone's going to receive prizes and I won't receive a prize. Everyone's going to get applauded and I won't be applauded. Everyone will get a wonderful holiday and I won't get that wonderful holiday. So that's also fear of losing out. Everyone else will be rewarded and not me. So that would be a selfish motivation to try and push yourself to do the right thing. Yaseh al menat lekabel pras, do it for the reward. Ha'ayin shemakesh schar la'atzmoy. Do it from a selfish perspective. You can trick yourself from that direction to become a selfless, higher, greater person. That's in terms of mitzvahs between you and Hashem. Also between mitzvahs between you and your neighbors, you and your fellow man. Do like this. Do it also for the sake of the reward. Like we said, there's a reward. There's a worry of losing out. And also do it mitoch rachamim. Do it out of compassion. Now go and help your neighbor because you feel sorry for him. Feeling sorry for him is just because I feel sorry for him. I don't want to have this guilty feeling. Right? The analogy is there's a person sitting in a restaurant and they just served this beautiful meal, and right in front of him, outside the window, is a pauper, thin looking pauper. He can't enjoy his meal, you know. So he says, you know, yeah, take $10 and go away, right? You know. You gave the pauper was interfering with your ability to enjoy your meal. So therefore, you gave him $10 to go away, to go get yourself something to eat. You didn't say go away. Right? You said, take $10, go get yourself something tasty to eat. Right? In the meantime, he went away. So you really did it for yourself. As you're doing it because you're feeling sorry for someone else, but you're doing it for yourself. This is using your own hunger to better yourself. Right, this type of feeling sorry for other people or wanting to share in the burden of other people. Sometimes people are all working, so you feel guilty not to be helping them. Everyone's helping. Everyone's schlepping chairs and everyone's laying tablecloths and everyone's doing this and they're doing that and you're just sitting there. So you don't feel comfortable. You know, everyone's helping and I'm doing nothing. So you also go and help them. So it's also your real motivation is because you don't want to feel uncomfortable. You don't want to feel people are looking at you and saying, you know, why is that person not helping? So even though the motivation is not pure, but still it's worthwhile to use those motivations to move yourself. Kisibas maisehu asher yidche es tzar atzmoi. The reason for doing this act will be because you feel your own pain. You want to alleviate your own pain. Or you feel pain at seeing your friend in pain, so you're doing it to alleviate your own pain. It hurts you to see someone else suffer. That's also not pure motivation. It's because it hurts you to see someone else suffer. You want to alleviate your own hurt, so you will do for him. These types of actions all come from our desire to take. Okay, we're doing good acts, but we're doing it because of our desire to take. Because really, you're doing it for yourself. However, it's good to use these means for the sake of your own spiritual growth. Right? You're using these lowly devices, but for a higher purpose. Right? As we said before, the candy that you give the kid. We say in the Shema, love Hashem with all your heart. The word all your heart spelt with two bezim. The two, right? Levovcho is two hearts, with both your hearts. What do you mean both your hearts? You've got two hearts. You've got the heart, you've got the desire to love Hashem, and you've got the desire to love yourself. So do it with your own self-love. Serve Hashem with your own self-love. That's called b'chol levovcho. B'shnei Yisrael, with both your inclinations, your good inclination and your evil inclination. Which to say that a person should be using his Yetzirah to further his own climbing, his own spiritual progress. This is now going to share with us a wonderful idea. Yetzir Teva, a very good device, good advice. The Kenyan Koyach and the Sina Sheis Amikbo, right? There's certain very good device we can use to train ourselves to become givers. And Koyach HaUmnus, right? There's a power that's called expertise, craftsmanship. We speak about a craftsman. We speak about someone who operates at a very high level of craftsmanship. So what is a top craftsman? If you have a top painter or a top writer, writes beautiful works, beautiful novels, whatever it is, or a top you have a top musician, plays very, very beautiful music. So that's called craftsmanship. There's craftsmanship in different areas, right? You can have a carpenter who's a craftsman. You can have different areas of life. People reach very high, a master. People reach very high levels of expertise. So what makes him special? What makes the craftsman special? What makes his work shine over everyone else's? So that's his ability. And that is because he senses very fine points using his imagination. As he seeks, right, let's say it's a musician, he seeks to draw out a certain sound. He already senses, he has a sense of certain subtleties within the music that he's already aware of, and he seeks to draw it out in his music, right? Or if he's an artist, he seeks to bring out these details, these very, very fine details in his artwork that are going to portray a certain mood or certain aesthetic, whatever it is. So that's called the craftsmanship, the ability to discern very, very fine details using our imaginations. So this imagination that we have, the ability to superimpose, to understand something, to see fine details, is matonas hakelhu. It's a gift from Hashem. This ability to discern very, very subtle things is a gift from Hashem. Ha'uman yirev yirgesh prati prati mashel lo yuvchinam acher. And the craftsman sees and senses details and details of details that others don't discern. Right? When you see, a masterpiece, so you say, wow, that looks wonderful. But right, what makes it special is that the craftsman who did it, he has all these tiny, tiny details which all together make this wonderful impression. We're not even aware of the tiny details, but we have a sense of its magnificence. Right? What's the source? The source is the attention to detail, amazing, amazing details, right? You see a beautiful house, right? The architect, you know, spent hours and hours on each detail of his planning. So that comes out in the overall beauty. Right? And therefore he gives expression, right? He notices the small details, and he gives expression to what he sees, either in his words, if he's a speaker, or in his writing, if he's a writer, or a pestle, if he's a sculptor. So you see the nuances, you see the details, or betmuna, if he's an artist. So therefore, a person would have to be a great craftsman, for instance, to bring out the senses of a mother for her worry of her sons. Let's say you have a sculptor who wants to do a sculpture of a mother with her child. So he wants the mother, he wants the viewer to see how much the mother loves the child in the sculpture itself. He wants, somehow, he's not just a woman and a baby, right? It's not just a big potato and a little potato, right? Stuck together with a toothpick, right? That's not his sculpture. But he wants somehow people to sense in his sculpture how much the mother loves the child, how much she's concerned about the child, how much she's worried about the child. So whether it's a sculpture, whether it's a painting, or whether it's a story, he's describing a story, how much the mother is concerned for a child. He's looking to draw out those nuances. That comes from, that's the craftsmanship, that's the genius. The genius within the writer or the painter, whatever it is, or the musician. He wants to bring out Echi Mageshus or Kosheshus Bedakus, the Pratius Niflo. He wants to bring out her feelings and how she's feeling, what she's thinking about, in tremendous detail in his work. However, the mother herself, who is in the situation of having this child that she's worried about, she doesn't need to be this craftsman. Right? She naturally feels these feelings. What he's trying to portray in his painting, this man on the outside is drawing this painting. So she feels in reality. That's for her, it's a reality. Her senses, her feeling of love or her worry or her concern for her child. That is natural. That's within her. That's built into her. He does it naturally. Right? And these very fine details, these make a tremendous impression. We understand that, for instance, this example of the mother's feeling for her son, for her child. So we understand that it's very, very powerful. Right? These are sometimes our most powerful moments of our lives. Right? Let's say, for instance, right, you have this situation where, whatever, let's say there's a parent who's rushing a child to the hospital. Something happened, he's worried. So those moments, he's more alive than ever. These become the most dramatic moments in his life. This is, right, all the senses are, right, the hearing is different, and the vision is different. Everything, he's much more alert, he's more awake, he's rushing with his kids to the hospital, and he's thinking a million thoughts at the same time. It's a different level of connection with reality. That's what we've got there. So that's the person who's actually experiencing it, and that's also the person on the outside who's trying to portray it, whether it's in a story or whether it's in a painting, whatever it is, he's trying to portray that sense of being alive, that liveliness. Now, how does this affect us? It's very nice, but what has it got to do with us? We're not painters, and we're not sculptors, and we're not musicians. What has this got to do with us? As follows. Right? Hashem has put this spark of this craftsmanship in each and every one of us. This sensitivity to detail and to insight into what's happening, we all have this. We all have this. All of us. We all have it. Im Rav or Mat, maybe a little bit more, some people, maybe a little bit less, other people, doesn't matter, we all have it. Anyone who thinks into a situation and imagines what's going on, right? So let's say, for instance, your neighbors are having problems. You know they had problems, you heard something, right? And you're thinking about them. And you're imagining to yourself what's happening in that household. You don't see it because the door's closed. But you're thinking about their situation, you know their problems there, and you're imagining what's going on, you're imagining the emotions at play, you're imagining the worries, and you imagine the concerns and the pressure, whatever it is that's going on. The Yagish Hadovel, we have the ability, using our imaginations, to feel another person's pain. This is an actual ability we have. We just use it, we have to just we have to just start it off, get the machine moving. So we can actually feel, we can be totally sensitive to other situations. And you can experience it almost as if it's happening to you. So you use an example. You're walking with a friend on the beach, and your friend stubs his toe on a rock. He says, "Oi, that's so sore, oi, 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 oi." So you also have the ability to put it in yourself, in his shoes, except he's not wearing shoes, yeah? Put himself in his feet, and to feel what he's feeling. To a degree, obviously it's not going to be the same. It hurts him more than it hurts you. But it's actually, that's not even true, because it's actually sometimes a very great person, this is what Moshe Feinstein used to say, right? He would feel other people's pain more than they felt it themselves. They used to come with their tzoros, and he used to feel their pain more than they felt their own pain, right? Because they, right? It's that level of sensitivity. So that is an ability we have. So therefore, this is one of the tools we should be using. If we're looking to have spiritual growth, so therefore we should be developing our own sensitivities, and we should use this as a device, as a tool. We should use this also to become giving people. In others we mentioned before, sometimes you will do an act of giving because you feel sorry for the other person, you can't bear to see him suffer. Okay, so if you can arouse that sense of compassion in yourself by looking into his situation and feeling sorrow for him, so then that will motivate you to give. You'll want to give, you'll have a need to give, because you feel his pain. He's in such pain, and you know, with a few pennies I can help to alleviate that pain. Of course I'm going to help him. Of course I'm going to help him, right? You see a person struggling under, he's carrying, you see a friend carrying, 10 bags of groceries, struggling, almost falling over. Of course you rush over to give a hand, right? And let me help you with your groceries. Whatever it is, whatever help you can give, when you feel the other person's pain, obviously you'll want to give. That's what we're talking about. Using our own desire to really feed ourselves, to take care of our own needs, to make us into givers. Because if we feel their pain, and then we will want to do it because we don't want to be in pain. Right? This is what we're talking about. So all of this is talking about Terem Shiagia Adam the Simcha Advekes Vashem Yisborch Vavos. All of this is before a person comes to the joy of clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Hashem's love. Shehem Eshor Sheikoch HaNasin HaKamu, which is really the root of being a giver, is a person feels tremendous closeness to Hashem, a tremendous joy in Hashem, a tremendous love in Hashem. So therefore, those are the real motivators. When a person is very close to Hashem, then he's automatically motivated to give because of that closeness to Hashem. He's up there. He wants to help others. But before we get to that level, so that we can use this power of imagination to join us to our friends, to our neighbors, to people around us, and to also doing mitzvahs, the importance of doing a mitzvah in the proper way. Yitzai b'nafshe is tzaris nafshe haveri. To imagine to yourself the pain of your friend, the daigosav, the kolkratem, chalkem, all of his worries and all of his concerns, as yisab oel imo yirachamer, then you'll want to share in his weight, in his yoke, and you'll have compassion on him. And also, if you can imagine for yourself the greatness of your friend's joy when he finally gets out of his predicament, when you help, right? When he leaves the dilemma, right? When he manages to marry off one of his kids, or to bring his child home from hospital, whatever it is, right? To get out of debt, whatever it is, can you imagine? When you can, just like you felt his pain, you can feel his joy. You start rejoicing with him. This is really one of the hard parts of going to a wedding, because going to a wedding, it's not just about eating crackers at the buffet table, right? It's really you're there to rejoice with them, and their joy, the bride and groom have the ultimate joy. And really, if you can awaken these feelings within yourself, you can have the same joy. You can even be happier than them. How's that, right? Wow, what a formula. You go to a wedding and you're even happier than the bride and groom. You can actually do that. We have that ability just to put ourselves, right, to be sensitive to what's happening, right? A new Jewish home is being opened up, being built, a young couple coming together, two families are being joined, what a wonderful occasion. So if you can, you put your thoughts into that situation, so then that will arouse, not only feeling pain for others, you're feeling joy for others. You start rejoicing with them, their joy becomes your joy. So then obviously that's a way to join with them. As we yodu ki vi yodu le saviv oyshe rav kazel erei v'nisin also haloi toke le v'nisin. And therefore certainly if you know that you can help your friend, just not your friend who's presently in trouble, you can help him to have great joy of being released from his troubles. So you're also already anticipating that joy. Right now you feel his pain, and you anticipate the joy he will feel when he'll be released, and you're already enjoying that joy that you're going to help him towards. So this is device. This is a wonderful device from the destiny. And now he just adds here. We basically finished this piece. He just adds a little bit more here. He says as follows: if your love for your fellow Jew is not enough to is not activated enough through this imagination, right? It's not really working for you. This device is not really working for you. You're not really know how to use it properly yet. Adan yochel ishtamesh beyiro. So there's another device that you can use, and that's a fear lahagish as chiyuva leyos leisin, to have a sense of your obligation to become a giver. This is another device, right? You're worried about not being a giver. I'm worried about being a selfish person. I'm worried about being a taker. So use the worry that you don't want to end up just being a person who's just a taker, right? And to fulfill your obligation to become a giver. And let your imagination help you feel what will be like to be a giver. What will be like to be, right, a very gracious person who gives to others, helps others. This is another motivation, right? That imagine how wonderful it is to be on a very high spiritual level, that I am naturally a giver and I'm not a taker. And then, once one already gets the taste of giving to others, once that becomes really a part of you, and then you don't need tricks anymore. At a certain point, right, we spoke about using different devices, right, arousing sympathy for others, etc. Once you've already entered that realm of become, you break into that realm where you've sort of training yourself to think from a different perspective. You're thinking of in terms of helping others as opposed to just helping yourself. So then you don't need devices anymore. You'll acquire a new nature, and you'll be a person who gives purely for the sake of giving. And then eventually, please God, one can reach that. Right? You know, these are just in the meantime, devices to use in the meantime until we become naturally generous people, naturally giving people, people who are generally concerned for other people. And we're not talking about quantities, how much money you give or how much time you give. We're just talking about the desire, to have a desire within yourself to really help others. And to not be focused on my own lacking, what I'm lacking, but to have a sense of wanting to bring joy to other people and wanting to help other people along. So then at that point we can reach our ideal.